Learn Persian with Chai in Conversation, Attar's Parable of the Moths Who Wanted to Know Their Beloved, Part 4 with Omid Arabian. Salam Omid Jan.
Salam Elahan.
And welcome everyone to the thrilling conclusion of this story from Parable of the Moths. We are now reading the very end of our story, and I think let's get right into it.
Great, great. So this is how it goes. ناقد ایشان چو دید او را ز دور شام با خود کرده هم رنگش ز نور.
When their pundit sage saw it from afar, the candle having rendered the moth the same radiant color as itself, meaning the moth has become one with the candle.
گفت این پروانه در کار است و بس. کس چه دانه؟ این خبردار است و بس.
The pundit sage exclaimed, "This moth is the only one who knows what it's doing, is doing the right thing. It's the only one who has the true knowledge, awareness of the candle."
آن که شد هم بی خبر هم بی اثر از میان جمله او دارد خبر.
Among everyone, the one who becomes unaware, the one of whom no sign remains, becomes obliterated, is the only one that is truly aware of the beloved.
تا نگردی بی خبر از جسم و جان، کی خبر یابی ز جانان یک زمان.
While you haven't yet become unaware, not so focused on your own material aspect and material life, when, how will you become aware of the dearest one, the beloved, even for a moment? All right. Well, this was another exciting part. So the pundit who was so uninterested before now became very excited.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and so we can see in the first verse that we read just now that there's a difference, right? ناقد ایشان چو دید او را ز دور. So ناقد ایشان, we had ناقد, it's the sage and the pundit. ناقد ایشان. ایشان is them, right? The plural, right? چو دید او را ز نور. چو here is when, right? چو دید, when the pundit saw, did mean saw. او را, when the pundit saw it, right? It's being back, going back to the third moth. ز دور, from far, right? So the moth has gone to the candle and the other moths, including the pundit, are watching. From a distance. And so the pundit is looking from a distance. And mm-hmm. when he sees now what's happening to this third moth, sham ba khud karde ham rangash zanur, when he sees that the sham, the candle, ba khud, with itself, karde, has done or has made, ham rangash. Ham rang, rang means color, ham rang means the same color, right? Ham rang. Ham means together or kind of the same, right? So ham rangash, the same color. So sham ba khud karde ham rangash. When we put it together, the candle has made it the same color as itself. Yeah? And then zanur, from the light. So it all kind of blends into this beautiful picture of the moth coming, becoming the same color as the light of the candle, as the fire.
Right. They've become one. Ham rang. Same color.
Yeah, and so that's a beautiful point you just made, which is that when we say hamrang, if it literally means the same color, right? But when we take it a little bit deeper, it really has this kind of connotation of really becoming one together.
Right.
Where your color and my color are the same. It implies a oneness, a coming together.
Right.
And this is where now the pundit is having, as you said, a slightly different kind of response. We're going to see in the next verse what the pundit is going to say about this third moth that might be different than what it has said about the first and the second.
Although I have to say, point out also that this ناقد, it makes a point of saying دید او را ز دور. It's like making a point to say that the ناقد is watching from afar. So the ناقد is not really any different from the other times when, you know, the moth went to look at the candle from afar.
Yes and no.
No.
Yes, at the moment, the Naged is observing from afar. But it is possible that the Naged has had this experience also in the past. Again,
I'm giving the Narad a really hard time. You can tell my feelings about critics.
Clearly, and very, very much understandable. But I'm just putting out another possibility out there that maybe this guy is not so much one of those critics that has not done it themselves, but one of those that has done it and has a better understanding. And so he's speaking from a place of knowledge.
I mean, that it's hard to come back from becoming the same color as the light of a candle, I will say.
True,
so I don't
true.
Know. That's a kind of one-way door.
And again, also to your point, true. And there are many pundits and sages among us and around us that speak without having any clue, with all due respect, no names. But I hear you, sure. Okay. For me, to be honest, and I wanted to say this actually, for me, the Narad really speaks the voice of Attar. For me, I think, as we read further, we'll see that as he speaks with a certain kind of knowingness and confidence that really it's Attar speaking through this character, speaking to us. The way that the Narad is speaking to the Mods, I think Attar is probably speaking to us and really giving us kind of the whole point of the story in the next few lines. That really, what is the story really about, right? It's not just a bunch of moths and literally a candle. So we get to the next verse, right? Goft in parvane dar kar ast va. Kas che danad in khabar dar ast va.
Okay, so goft, the pundit said, in parvane dar kar ast va. So that's a really nice imagery. So in means this, in parvane, this moth. This moth that has now disappeared. Dar kar ast o bas. So kar is the word for work. So is in the work, is doing it. O bas. Bas means enough. So this is it. This moth is it. And that's it. It's hard to translate that. It's such a beautiful little expression. Dar kar ast o bas. And it's hard to translate that. This is doing it. And that's it.
It's doing what needs to be done. It's got the right idea, basically, and that's it.
That's enough.
Compared to the other mods that don't.
Basically. Yeah. Kas che danad. So kas che danad. So I don't know if I'm interpreting. So kas is a person or a
anyone. It could mean anyone. Yeah.
Che danad. What do they know?
Yeah. What does anyone else know, basically? Right? In contrast, again, to this mod. Right? Kas here then becomes not just anyone, but anybody other than this mod. Chedonad. What does anybody else know?
In khabardar ast. So, in khabardar ast. Or is it khabardar ast? Okay. So, khabar is the word for news. And khabar, a person who is khabardar means someone who is in the know. Or it could mean khabardar ast, which is
has
news. It's what?
Has the knowledge or the knowingness.
Has the knowledge, yeah. Daras obas. Like only this person has the knowledge, or this being has the knowledge, and that's it.
And that khabar becomes that priceless kind of gift. That's really the point of these expeditions, is to bring khabar, bring awareness, bring knowingness or knowledge of the candle, right? Or to receive or to come into that knowingness. And so the pundit is really drawing this sharp contrast by emphasizing the word in. As we read this verse, we emphasize the word in, which means this one, right? And so he's really pointing to this third moth as distinct from the other two, and it's this one that has consequently received this priceless gift of khabar, which is that true and full awareness. So this is the one that has really completed kind of its mission, its journey. Ankeshod ham bi khabar, ham bi asar, az miyan jumle.
Okay, so on kishud, ham bi khabar, ham bi asar. So on that ki, which should became, ham, there's that word ham again. Both, so in this case it means both, bi khabar, without any knowledge, ham bi asar, and without any being or without any effect, or I don't know what's asar mean in this case.
In a way, asar here comes to kind of refers to signs of ourselves, right? So bi asar means there's no sign of you left. When you become bi asar, it means that you're not leaving any sign, you're not leaving any mark, you completely kind of disappear, you completely fade away. And then bi khabar here, now khabar here refers back to the self, right? Mm. So bi-chabar here means really without awareness of your little self, of your ego self, of your material self.
Wow, right? Which is interesting because here he's referring to the moth as bi-chabar, whereas in the last one it said in-chabar do-rastobas.
Exactly.
So both with all the knowledge and without all the knowledge.
And so that's beautiful, and that's the distinction, right? Once we lose awareness of this little material self, we lose chabar of our ego self, then we can start to have chabar of the beloved, of the candle, of that object of desire. These two things have to go hand in hand. I cannot be self-conscious and ecstatic at the same time, right? I have to lose this sense of, as we call it, self-consciousness in order to open my way into ecstasy. So that's the kind of being bi-chabar. Mm. And then bi-asar, kind of the same idea. I've lost so much my sense of self-consciousness that it's as though this me doesn't exist anymore. Mm. I have become one with the beloved, one with the candle.
Okay, so as mian jumle, so mian means in the midst of, mm-hmm. right? As mian jumle, so in the midst of everyone, or the sentence is jumle, but here it means
everyone.
U darat khabar. Okay, so we came back to the news that you're saying.
The awareness of the kid.
He, she has the awareness.
Yeah, going back to that third month. Right. Yes. So this really kind of, this line and the next verse really, I think, kind of cements the notion that Attar wants us to take away from the story. And that has to do with losing a sense of self-consciousness so that we can enter into consciousness of the beloved, consciousness of that ultimate object of our seeking and desire. And that's why khabar is used in both ways. In each half of this verse, right? You lose khabar of yourself, you lose self-consciousness, so that you can gain khabar of your beloved.
All right. And then the next.
Yeah. Sure. Ta negardi, yeah, this verse really sums it all up. Ta negardi bi khabar az jism o jan, kay khabar yabi z janan yek zaman.
Okay, so ta, until, nakardi, you've not, nagardi, you don't, gardidan is to kind of twirl around, right?
Yes, and also it can mean to become.
Okay, to become.
Right. To become. And I think here it means it has that connotation, to become.
Bi khabar, so without news, like you said, as jism of the body, like the corporeal body, or jan, and the soul, and life.
Life, I would say here.
Material life, okay.
Yeah.
So until you've not become bi-chabar, as we've said.
Well, until you lose all awareness of your own material self, your own material body, and your own material life, until then.
And then ke-chabar, ke or ki?
Ke.
Okay, ke-chabar yabi ze-janan yek zaman.
So this is kind of a rhetorical question, right? Yeah. Kei khabar yabi. Kei is when. Khabar, again, news, awareness. Yabi comes from yaftan, which means to find. Right? So yabi is you find. So kei khabar yabi. When will you find? Right? When will you find? When you will reach or find ze janan? Ze, again, as, from. Janan is a beautiful word that, again, refers to the beloved. Right, it's one of the words that the mystic poets use often for their beloved, something that you hold as dear as your life. Right, we say janeman, right, and so jananeman. It's like something that you're willing to give your life for, your dearest. So ke khabar yabi ze janan. When will you ever find news or awareness of this dear, precious, beloved of yours? Yek zaman, even for a moment. Yek one. Zaman, time. So yek zaman, at any time or for any moment, at any moment. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So khabar comes into play a lot in that last few sections.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically, the first 2 months were going and observing and coming back and trying to tell their observances to the other moths. They were trying to be of service and do that. But in the end, as the sage says, the only way to really understand is to lose yourself. So there's no way that someone else can tell you. No one else can do it for you.
Beautiful. That's exactly right. And so there's both of those things go hand in hand, right? Until and unless the third moth loses itself in the candle, it doesn't have full awareness of the candle. And so without that experience, coming back and reporting anything is not really that worthwhile, because it's kind of like a secondhand telling, and it's also a telling of an incomplete experience, right? So it points to both the full experience of union and also the idea that there is no reporting that experience, right? One has to just have it for oneself directly.
Right, exactly. And yeah. It took, you know, the first two moths were, the first two paravanas were sober, and they went and, you know, they had ideas of like, okay, maybe I can try this, maybe I can try that. It really took this state of mast budan for this moth to, like, do you think that the moth could have just gone in a, you know, talked to the other ones and then just gone? Or did it need to be in that mast state, you know, Paul Kuban and all that?
Yeah, I think the drunkenness, the masti, is a very integral part of the story and of this experience. And I think you're absolutely right to say that that's one of the things that distinguishes the third moth from the other two, right? That sense of kind of coming out of self-consciousness and into awareness of the beloved is described often in the context of being drunk, right? Which again is also a kind of ecstatic coming out of the self and the self-consciousness kind of experience. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. As much as the first two kind of intellectualized the experience, and we even had like a daftar that came into play, a notebook that came into play. Like, exactly. The daftar did nothing. It took someone feeling outside of themselves to have the courage to go do that as well.
Yeah. And the whole journey, if I may, is really a journey of talab. We had that word, I think, at the beginning.
Right.
In the mystical experience, the journey of our life, that the greatest journey of our life is this journey of seeking talab. And it's like a great hero's journey with lots of challenges along the way, which Attar describes over the full course of Mantavotere, which Conference of the Birds, which this parable comes from. The whole book is really this description of this entire journey, right? Thousands of verses. But the toughest part of the journey is this last part, right? For the mystics, the idea is that we are here to experience union with what they call the beloved, which one could call the source of all existence, the divine universal power, right? And that beloved is not really separate from us. It is us also. But as long as we think of ourselves as just this flesh and blood being with its thoughts and its history and its experiences, we're not going to be able to recognize the eternal, unlimited, universal aspect of ourselves. So the journey, in a sense, is giving up our certain notions of ourselves in order to come into khabar, awareness of this much deeper, much grander notion of ourselves. And this is, in a way, encapsulated, this aspect of it, in this parable, right? Where the moths are us, in a way, one could say. Mm-hmm. And the candle, especially the fire of the candle, represents that eternal, infinite, universal energy that we can call the divine or the beloved or the true self. And so the idea is to have this experience where you realize, you understand this version of yourself, the divine version of yourself. And that's what the moths seem to want, seem to be after.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes giving something to get that experience, right? It takes going past these challenges, going past the light of the candle and even the heat of the candle, which puts off, right, the second one. It's getting through these difficult parts and really embracing, right, the candle. Yeah. And that whole idea, I think, is such a beautiful, beautiful experience that, as Attar is suggesting, it's indescribable, right? We can't really go and tell somebody else, oh, this is what it's like to be one with yourself, with your divine self, with your beloved. But it has to be kind of a first-hand, direct experience.
Although it's hard for me to think so in an experience of a life, it seems like, I mean, what the other moths were doing to me seems admirable. You know, they're trying to, like... Cool. Yeah, I see it. But then this moth, all it had to do was just let go of inhibitions and then just go self-destruct. So in a way, to me, like with my thoughts and feelings coming from, you know, maybe a Western perspective or something, it makes it seem like that moth is taking the easy way out. It's just, even though it perishes in the end, like all we have to do is just like lose the inhibition and just go into the fire. Like what instead of having all these notebooks, I mean.
Sounds easy.
Yeah, it sounds easy. It's like, okay, well, then what's the point? What's the point of the notebooks?
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think a lot of times we get that from the mystics, which is that this kind of knowledge cannot be taken out of books that are understood from notebooks and from a legit logical kind of process, right? Now, whether it's easy or hard, well, the idea of the moth burning in the fire, right, really implies that there is a sense of difficulty. There is something that one has to overcome, right, in order to be able to give oneself fully to this notion. And it's not so easy. I don't want to get too specific, but it's not so easy for me to give up my notions of myself as a man or as an Iranian or as a whatever, and really understand my universal kind of aspect, which is no different than you, which is no different than anybody else. Giving up the personal kind of individual aspect, not permanently, but just kind of loosening up on that a little bit, is not really an easy thing, because we are so identified with those versions of ourselves. I'm so identified sometimes with my gender, with my nationality, with my religion, with my belief systems, with my whatever it may be. And so to come away from that and not think of me as the sum total of those identities may sound easy, but it's probably not such an easy thing to do.
That's true.
Yeah. So it's not obviously a literal burning. It's not a literally giving oneself away and giving one's life away. Let's make sure we say that, because it is not a literal
thing.
And it's important to understand that, right?
Right.
We are not here to harm ourselves. We are not here to do away with ourselves. It is, in fact, if there's anything that is being burned away, is my attachment to those identities, to those notions. To those ideas of who I am. When those ideas, quote unquote, burn away, and the attachment to those ideas burns away, then I can come into a deeper understanding of who I am as ultimately and essentially a universal being that is no different than you or anybody else in this world.
Yeah, I do think that's an important distinction, because that is kind of, if I'm taking it more literally, that is exactly what I think. Like, why not? What's the point of even the living part if the ultimate is just to burn in this fire?
Yeah. No, but the ultimate is to kind of, I mean, for the mystics, the ultimate is to have that experience, to know that you're something bigger than just these things. And then with that experience, come back and carry on with your life and move through your day and your whatever you're doing. But it really creates a shift, right? If I talk to you with this deep awareness that you and I are essentially no different because I've had this experience of finding my universal self, then I will relate to you in a different way. I may even speak to you in a different way. I may interact with you. I will interact with you in a different way, knowing that I am this universal being and so are you, right? Having what we have in common very much in my awareness becomes the foundation of our relationship, of our interaction, and that shifts, right? And imagine if more and more and more of us in this world started to become more and more aware of what is universal about us, what is essentially kind of the same about us, which for the mystics is our divinity, which is our true identity, beyond and above all the individual identities. Those are great, and difference is beautiful because it can create diversity and lots of different experiences. Each person is very unique, and that's part of our beautiful kind of existence. But our uniqueness becomes even more beautiful under the umbrella of that which unites us, that which makes us one. And until I have my experience, my own experience with that oneness, it'll be hard for me to have that with you or with anybody else.
Right. Wonderful. And we each one of us has to experience that for ourselves. We can't read about it or understand it from a distance.
Yeah. Although reading about it, right, is a wonderful experience, right? Reading Rumi, Hafez, Attar, all of these things are a great experience, but only to the point where we become encouraged and we get a sense of what this experience might be like, but not as a substitute, right? Mm-hmm. You can read, you know, 1,000 attars, and still that doesn't amount to having the actual experience, even if it might encourage you and get you excited and get you kind of interested in then going and seeking that experience yourself.
Right. And in this story, it was that first Parvana that went into the fire that probably has now encouraged the other Parvanas to do the same. Like they've seen it now, they know, witnessed it. And so I think that that's very important too.
Exactly. The third moth, as it goes towards the candle and has that full experience, and then the pundit says, hey, this is the true experience, as you say, maybe, and hopefully the other moths now say, okay, this is what I want to have also. And they'll become encouraged and emboldened to not just stop at a distance, but go all the way into that experience.
And it reminds me of, the spark that was lighted in Rumi when he met Shamsi Tabriz. Probably Shamsi Tabriz was that moth for him. He just saw that he was able to see that and it changed him forever. So I think these moths will also be changed forever from seeing this.
Beautiful. And maybe as we've read now the story together, maybe they will encourage us also, perhaps, to also start or continue our own seeking and become even more courageous and know that there is this great, beautiful experience to be had as we go on this journey. Yeah.
Wonderful. And I want to hear you read the entirety of our selection one more time in just Persian. But can you tell us what is this selection that you've made? Where is it in the context of the entire Conference of the Birds, where it's from?
Sure. So the story of the Conference of the Birds, as I mentioned, starts with all the birds coming together and deciding that they want to go and find their true king. They say every nation has a king, and we want to find the king of the nation of birds. And one of them, Hodhod, or the hoopoe, says, well, we already have a designated king whose name is Simorgh. And Simorgh lives up on Kuhagaf, which is a very distant mountain. And it's not an easy journey to go get to Simorgh. There's lots of kind of challenges and difficulties along the way. And so some of the birds decide that that's too much for them. They don't even begin the journey. But others, kind of like our moths, they begin the journey. They go towards Simorgh and they have to pass through 7 valleys. Each of them has its own kind of difficulties and challenges. And so with each step, with each valley, some of the birds drop out because they cannot make it through those challenges. So some of the birds arrive at the palace of the Simorgh, right, after the 7 valleys. Now, this parable comes during the journey through the 7th valley, which is the valley of Faqr wa Fana. Faqr meaning poverty and Fana meaning annihilation, right? And so again, as we see with the story, the third moth, in a way, enters into a state of fana, annihilation. Mm. Again, not literally, we're not talking about actually doing away with ourselves, but a kind of annihilation of previous notions of who we are, previous understandings of who we are, previous beliefs about who we are, right? That part gets annihilated, so there can be this experience of union with who we truly are, which is the beloved, which is the fire. And so that's kind of towards, again, I would say 4/5 of the way in the book.
Okay.
This is where this process occurs. Yeah.
Wonderful. And then if people want to read more of this story or to understand more of this story, do you have any classes or resources available to learn more?
Sure, with pleasure. We have classes on all the different mystics of Iran, so Rumi, Hafiz, Ferdowsi, Attar, so on and so forth. The classes begin at different times, so if they are interested in studying and really getting deeper into these topics, universal.org, universal with a Y-O-U.
Which we'll link to on the lesson page for this, of course.
Yeah. And so that's where all the new classes are announced, and they can get on our mailing list, and we'll keep them informed on when a new course is about to begin. So that's kind of to get deeper and really study it at a much more kind of piece by piece. Yeah, thank you. Grand level. But if there is interest in just kind of reading the book on your own and to kind of study it on your own, there is obviously the text available. This is my copy of Mantavoter. Yeah, edited by a wonderful gentleman, amazing man, Abhay Kat Kani. Mm-hmm. So this is the Persian text, if you want to read it. And then there's translations that are around. One of the oldest, not oldest, but one of the kind of older translations is this one, which is by a gentleman, and suddenly his name just left me. His name is Mr. Knott, C.S. Knott, N-O-T-T. Mm-hmm. So this is a decent one. But for me, a modern and really, really beautiful and fantastic translation is this one by Shola Wolpe. It's really kind of a magnificent rendering of the full entire Mantavoter into English. And I recommend this one very, very much.
Great. And I recommend both, getting the book and reading it, but then also it's so important to have a teacher because there's so many pieces in here that it helps so much to hear. So, you know, my understanding of this poem is so much different having talked to you. So thank you so much. It was really wonderful.
Thank you. And of course, it's not just having a teacher, it's doing it as a group, right?
Yes.
So in our classes, we work together. And so every person brings something to the table and it really helps build a broader and really a richer understanding of everything that we work on. So I want to give credit to everyone that participates. They're a big part
yes.
of this.
Yes, just like the moths here, I think you probably have students that, you know, have their little daft dad. You have some that look from afar. And then I'm sure that you have some that show up drunk, is what I'm
Absolutely.
Saying.
Absolutely. And my hope is that we all start to get more and more drunk wherever we start from. That's really the idea, for sure.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Oh, we were going to read it one more time in
yes.
all Persian, please. And then
with
we'll
pleasure, with pleasure. Absolutely. Yek shabi parvanegan, jam amadan. در مزیقی طالب شمع آمد. جمله می گفتند می باید یکی کو خبر آرد ز مطلوب اندکی. شد یکی پروانه تا قصری ز دور، در فضای قصر دید از شمع نور. بازگشت و دفتر خود باز کرد، مست او بر قدر فهم آغاز کرد. ناقدی کو داشت در مجمع مهی، گفت او را نیست از شمع آگهی. شد یکی دیگر گذشت از نور در، خیش را بر شمع زد از دور در. پرزنان در پرتو مطلوب شد، شمع غالب گشت و او مغلوب شد. بازگشت او نیز و مشتی راز گفت، از وصال شمع شرحی باز گفت. ناقدش گفتی نشان نیست از این، همچو آن یک که نشان دادی تو نی. دیگری برخاست می شد مست مست، پای کوبان بر سر آتش نشست. دست در کش کرد با آتش به هم، خیشتن گم کرد با او خش به هم. چون گرفت آتش ز سر تا پای او، سرخ شد چون آتشی اعضای او. ناقد ایشان چو دید او را ز دور، شمع با خود کرده هم رنگش ز نور. گفت این پروانه در کار است و بس، کس چه داند این خبردار است و بس. آن که شد هم بی خبر هم بی اثر، از میان جمله او دارد خبر. تا نگردی بی خبر از جسم و جان، کی خبر یابی ز جانان یک زمان.
Wonderful. And hopefully now after all these discussions, you all understood most of those words or the general meaning of it. And like we said before, we have all this written out in the Persian, the English phonetic, and the translation that Omid has provided for us, along with all the notes and everything in the lesson guide for this lesson. Thank you so much, Omid-jan. I hope that this is the first of many stories that we talk about together.
Me too. And I really want to say, Leyla-jan, it's been really my honor. I've been following you for a good long time, and I really appreciate what you do and your organization for all the people that are looking to learn Farsi. I always tell our students at Universal Center, if you really want to get the true experience of these texts, go learn Farsi. Even though we work in English mostly, we read the text in the original language, and it just, you know, there's nothing that compares to actually understanding the words. So thank you for the service that you do. I'm really grateful and really honored to be a little part of this.
Of course. And same to you. I appreciate what you do so much. I think there needs to be more and more of it. So I hope that we can introduce you to our students and get more people in your classes. And this is very important work. So thank you for doing that.
You're welcome. Thank you, Leyla.